from runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 697, Wireshark in 2020 with guest Laura Chappell. Recorded Friday, May 1st, 2020. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts LLC. For more information, visit soundthoughtsllc.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. While it has been 10 years, I'm bringing back Laura Chappell to chat with us. And Laura is the founder of the Chappell University and creator of the WCNA certification program, formerly referred to as the Wireshark Certified Network and Analyst Certificate Program. And Ms. Chappell has been analyzing network traffic for the purpose of troubleshooting and network forensics since 1990 and launched her company in 1993. And Laura is a thought leader in the National Science Foundation grant focused on jobs in the next 50 years, an advisor to the California Cyber Initiative Competition, Interplanetary Communications, we'll have to talk about that, and the co-chair for the High Technology Crime Investigation Association Student Outreach Program and the creator host of the recent CORE IT Virtual Conference. And it seems like all things are virtual conference these days.
They better be.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, in person is not cool right now. It's not the thing to do.
No. Everybody's staying home.
Yeah. And well, and I hate to say it, like I'm kind of enjoying it too. Like I like my home and I should spend more time here.
You know, it seems to be either somebody absolutely loves it and says, this is just great, or they just hate it.
Yeah.
Brenda Cardinal, who's been working with me for 20 years, she just can't stand it because her kids, you know, it's like, mom is home. This is great. So about every 20 minutes, they pop into her office for, and you know, she's got these cute kids that walk up and say, well, I just want a hug because I love you so much. What are you going to do? You know, kick them out of your office and say, well, I love you too, but not until 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
No, that doesn't work.
Love comes on a schedule here. Well, it's just the need to focus, right? To try and get some work done.
Right. Yeah.
No.
Yep. Absolutely.
My girls are grown and gone. So it's a little more peaceful around here.
Yes, my son is gone. My daughter is back from the UK. She went to college there, and she is back waiting to return to the UK to take her master's program there.
Right.
Once the airlines open up and the world opens up again.
It's going to be a while, I think.
Yeah, I agree. We just need to be patient.
Yeah, we just got to take the time.
Yep.
I am astonished at how much work you've done in the space of Wireshark. It sounds like a simple thing, and it just isn't.
Yeah, there are a lot of elements. And I mean, the last time we talked was 2010.
Yes.
Wireshark was so different back then. We had a different graphical interface tool that was used for Wireshark. The number of dissectors was so much smaller. Some of the key features that we use absolutely every single day have come up just in the last 4 years or so to change the entire way that we do analysis. This idea that we can annotate trace files now and build reports. The fact that we can build buttons so I can open up a trace file and just click a series of buttons and have my answer for you of exactly what went wrong in the communications. And then the fact that the amount of traffic crossing networks has just skyrocketed.
Sure.
You know, 10 years ago, I would say, oh, well, let's just take Wireshark and, oh, you got a problem in your network. Well, let's just throw Wireshark in the infrastructure and we'll just capture that traffic going from that machine to the other machine. We cannot do that anymore. Wireshark will throw up if it thinks you're going to throw it put it in the middle of an infrastructure. There is no way. So you have this whole ecosystem that's been built now that goes and captures this huge amount of traffic in the center of the infrastructure, does some of the capture filtering, and then it drills down to Wireshark because Wireshark's dissectors are so strong. So Wireshark becomes not the first step anymore in the process of troubleshooting or doing network forensics. It comes after your intrusion detection system has triggered and said, this conversation is suspect, or your packet capture tool in the infrastructure in the center picks up this one traffic stream and sends it over to Wireshark. It's really interesting how it's its position has changed. And we're on Wireshark version 3. There's another feature that's going to be coming out in the next, I think, week or so, maybe, that will allow us to take these fabulous buttons and put them into folders now so we can organize, so I can have my network forensics customization all done in a folder. I can have my troubleshooting in a folder. I can have my VoIP analysis in a folder, my Wi-Fi analysis in a folder. And just, it's just amazing what the developers have done over these years. It's just, it's so impressive. Amazing group.
And so we're at a point now where it is reasonable to monitor all traffic and to have it sort of continuously sorted into categories and exceptions pulled up. That's astonishing.
Exactly. Exactly. And we've got tools that are commercial tools. So you've got like Endace that has these big capture devices that sit inside the infrastructure. And then you've got pieces that plug in on top of that. You can have an IDS box on top of that. So the IDS box is actually constantly looking at all the traffic, and it will let you know, hey, we think you've got a problem over here, and let's go ahead and drill down to Wireshark. Then you've got a brand new product that was released on March 24th from Steve McCann. And Steve McCann is one of the co-creators of TCP Dump. And their product is this Brim security piece. It basically sits on top of Zeek, which used to be called Bro, which is free. So they've got this free tool that can go and sit out in the infrastructure. You're capturing all of this traffic, but you've got Zeek sitting underneath there that is categorizing and indexing everything and pulling metadata and building these amazing snapshots of what's happening. And from there, you can just pick one of those that looks suspect and throw it over to Wireshark. And again, you know, that's another free tool that's working around the Wireshark infrastructure.
Right. Yeah. And it's just an interesting, like I said, used to be Wireshark is what you drop on the network to read everything. Instead, you have these other tools to be monitoring. And then what's Wireshark's magic power then? These dissectors?
It's the dissectors. It's the fact that if you were to pull apart a TCP header, Wireshark's dissectors understand every single field inside that TCP header, down to the binary level, the bit level of individual flags. And in many of these dissectors, we have the expert system built in, which says, you know, this flag should never be set to this value when that other flag is set on. So it can alert us to tell us when we have a problem within a header.
Right.
And the dissectors now for Wireshark, I mean, it has hundreds and hundreds of dissectors for all of these different applications that run in a network. You could be running, Quake World or something like that. We've got a dissector for that.
Sure.
IPv4 fully dissected out. IPv6 obviously fully dissected out. I just did a class the other day showing people how to decrypt their traffic so we can watch HTTP version 2 traffic that's normally encrypted. How we could actually take the pre-master secret key and pop it into Wireshark and tell Wireshark, okay, decrypt my traffic for me so I can really understand what was I asking for over HTTP version 2. So there's just so much you can do.
I mean, isn't that defeating the whole point of the encryption of the traffic? Or is it because you own the keys that you did the encryption originally, you can decrypt it as well?
That is correct. So the two ways we can do decryption now with Wireshark is, one, I sit on my machine here and I'm on a Windows box here. I would configure Windows to go ahead and pop the key down. It's one of the environment variable settings. So I want to pop the syslog key down into a directory. Then I'll go out and I'll browse and things like that while I'm capturing the traffic. And I just point Wireshark to that same syslog key. So I'm in control of my own key set here, and I'm the one that shares it with Wireshark. The only other way it would be, let's say somebody gives me the RSA keys for their server, which, I mean, if they do, they've got bigger problems than troubleshooting.
I don't know that I would take them if they offered them. Right?
Exactly. I don't want to be liable for that.
Yeah.
No. You keep your keys and let's do a class on security.
Yeah. There's a better way to do this.
Yes. Yeah. But if I am the owner of that server, let's say we have our server, I've got my own RSA keys for my server, I can put that into Wireshark to tell Wireshark, okay, let's decrypt all the traffic to and from this box. But I'm in control of the server and it's my keys. Obviously, we don't go handing those out anywhere. So
yeah, we don't want that.
So there are a lot of things that Wireshark can do now that it could not do 10 years ago. So we use it in different ways too, with the way that traffic is changing. And, you know, we've got more peer-to-peer traffic happening now that we didn't used to have. We used to try to stay away from peer-to-peer traffic no matter what. It was like, oh, if it's peer-to-peer, it's going to be Nutella. It's going to be LimeWire. It's going to be one of these malicious programs. Well, you know, I'm on a Windows 10 machine, and my machine does its Windows updates using peer-to-peer from other hosts. So suddenly I've got other Windows machines sending stuff to my machine in huge, huge chunks.
Yeah.
That's the way traffic is running now. Everybody's trying to optimize communications.
Well, yeah, and more VLANing, far more point-to-point. Like, you just don't have a lot of broadcast networking. But it also brings up the whole point of this software-defined network. Like, how much does that impact the ability to monitor and to apply Wireshark to things?
Oh, yeah. There are so many changes with the way that the traffic runs. You know, in the olden days, we would go and connect to the server and we'd download some of the application pieces, but we'd run the primary application locally. Nowadays, I can go and I can hit a site and everything's actually running remotely, and it affects the traffic rate. It's really fascinating. Mm. If people haven't done a baseline of their traffic recently, just sitting on your system at home, you know, sitting on a laptop at home, let's just take a look when I am running something like, you know, maybe my browser, or I want to do emails, or I want to go to YouTube. Take a look at the traffic, because it's really fascinating to see where things are in traffic rates and how you can kind of get a feeling for how companies have optimized their communications. You can see it in the beginning of the setup process. You can see the difference between videos that are streaming versus queuing, from looking at a graph and seeing how it does this bump along a graph line. The baselines we took, I would say 6 months ago, are going to be different than the baselines we would take now.
Sort of pre and post pandemic traffic wise. Yeah.
Oh, it's just so different. Mm-hmm. So different right now. We have so many people out there that are at their homes, and you know, I watch news all day long. I'm one of those news junkie people. Sure. So in my home office, I have this wonderfully beautiful TV up there, and I watch it, but I'm also capturing the traffic as my home router is multicasting that TV channel. And I can see the moment I look up and I see all of a sudden the screen is frozen, you know, I'm hopping over to Wireshark to see, okay, what has happened here?
Right.
We've got a multicast stream, and we have huge amounts of packet loss at one time in the multicast stream. I mean, we're constantly seeing these interviewers looking at a blank screen, or their audio goes out, or, I mean, it's fascinating to see the load, that is happening right now. And some of the statistics on the load on the internet are just incredible.
Yeah. We are stressing the internet in a way we've just never dealt with before. And I'm astonished that it's holding together as well as it is. I've got to think there's a duck effect here. There's a whole lot of paddling going on somewhere.
Oh, you know, it is incredible. And I think that's a huge story that people have really missed, is that the world made this incredible dynamic shift so quickly, and the internet stayed stable enough to support us all for this.
Yeah, so far.
Oh, cross your fingers.
Well, and getting Netflix to turn off their 4K service. Yeah, okay. That's our concern. Oh my God, I got to live with 1080p. Save me.
I know. We're so spoiled. Isn't that something? It's so true.
But that's the only concession to keeping the worldwide communication system working. That's astonishing to me.
You know, it's incredible. It's incredible. But I'm with you with that. I'm watching, you know, Westworld season 3. I'm just like, wait a minute. The quality should be much higher
better
than this.
Yeah. This is
I'm a little disappointed, but okay. All right. I will be a good member of the internet society, and I will give up my high def. Yes.
Well, and it certainly over on this pandemic series I've been doing as part of RunAs, we've been having this conversation about, with everybody home, working from home is more challenging because it is Xbox traffic and Netflix traffic and so forth for different folks, depending on what they're doing in a given day. And most home networks are just not that sophisticated. All that traffic is the same.
Right. And a lot of people don't realize. I was showing this to somebody yesterday. So I've got a TV on in my office, and right now it's muted, but it's showing me a news channel. Mm-hmm. If I turn off the TV, but leave the router on right above it, I turn off the TV, I have no TV in the rest of my house that is receiving this information. It will still continue to multicast.
Wow.
It will continue to multicast that channel until I turn off the actual cable box connected to the TV.
Interesting.
And when I turn the cable box back on, it doesn't have a last known channel, and so it doesn't start multicasting until I pick a channel, turn on the TV, and pick a channel. So if people haven't looked at what is happening on their home networks and they don't really realize the weird behavior, I'm in an AT&T U-verse home network here. Mm-hmm. If they don't really look at it, they have no idea that they could be getting just slammed with all this unnecessary multicast traffic. And the way to stop it is you just turn off that one, box over by that last used TV.
Right. And you can turn it right back on, because until you ask it for something, it's not going to send any traffic.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
Exactly. But until then, I am just getting slammed with all of this multicast traffic.
Whether you're using it or not.
Exactly. And I have nothing receiving it. I mean, nothing that is set up to show me the receipt of that traffic. All it is just spewing garbage out.
Yeah.
Now, it's because it's multicast, of course, it's going everywhere all over through my network.
Hammering
so it's fascinating.
Yeah. And absolutely beyond the average consumer. But I think for as IT folks, we could be using these tools to sort of help our neighbors improve their network.
Oh, sure. I'm constantly listening to my neighbor's wireless network.
He's supposed to say it on a podcast, Laura. I'm not so sure.
No. I'm not listening to what the packets are. It's just that they've got the signal turned up way too strong.
Right.
It's so unnecessary. And I can walk all the way up to their garage door and I'm just getting blasted. And I can even hear it over here at my house. And we're not actually that close. Huh. And so we have a barbecue, a cul-de-sac barbecue happening tomorrow night at 5 o'clock where we all roll out our barbecues into the cul-de-sac and everybody's social distancing. But I have a little note for them about, this is what you need to do. This is the make and model of your access point. And this is what you need to do to change so you're not blasting where my wireless network is. We're just fighting over it. So.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And Laura, I'm going to interrupt for one moment for this very important message. This episode of Run As Radio is brought to you by the Humanitarian Toolbox. Humanitarian Toolbox builds open source software for disaster relief organizations. One of the leading projects, called Already, focuses on getting volunteers into the right place at the right time using cloud and mobile technology. HTBox builds and operates this and other applications on behalf of a variety of disaster response organizations, and they need your help. Go to htbox.org for more information or to make a tax-deductible donation. HTBox is a 501c3 U.S. registered charity.
And we're back. It's Run As Radio. That's Laura Chappell. I'm Richard Campbell. Thanks for listening. And the Chappell University, so you're just teaching Wireshark all of the time?
It's more than teaching Wireshark. It's teaching the protocols, teaching how the network communicates. Wireshark is the tool that I use to do that. But I could also use TCP dump. I could use dump cap. There's so many different tools out there that now can capture traffic and look at it, and decipher it for me. The big thing is that interpretation.
Right.
Of what does it mean? So I did a class the other day where we were looking at a host sitting at a location, traffic coming into this location, and there were a few unusual packets talking to that target system. And it's a matter of teaching people to understand, okay, that packet right there, that's called a null scan. Somebody is trying to see if that target is either up and running right now or whether that port is available. And they're not doing it with a normal TCP scan. They decided to come in with a null scan. So the purpose of this is most likely malicious.
Right. But just by the nature of the request, it's like, that's a black hat move.
Yes. That just doesn't fit what we would consider being a kind and gentle way to see, I just wonder if your machine is up.
Right.
No, this is not the typical way. This is a sneaky way of doing it. And so we would question that packet. So we ended up with this class and we had, 300,000 packets. And when we got rid of all the good traffic, we ended up with these three packets to look at. What were these three packets that did not match our virus detection update process, Dropbox update process, Skype background process? We got rid of all the good stuff. And what you're left with is, what are these?
Yeah.
What are these things? So a lot of the teaching that I do is the interpretation, you know, understanding a connection to a server where we are using all the wonderful functionality that TCP offers us versus when we don't. Okay, what's our communication going to be like one way versus the other way? Which one is going to be most effective for file upload, mm-hmm. file download, you know, those kinds of things? How can we optimize our communication? So, and then if there are other tools also that I have branched out past Wireshark, although, you know, I live, eat, and breathe with Wireshark
sure.
on the background. But, you know, Nmap just the new version of Nmap just came out yesterday. Absolutely phenomenal tool set. I look at the tools from Brim. I look at the tools from MetaGeek for wireless. There are so many tools in our industry that can help us understand what's happening with the network. And my primary focus is to help people understand their network.
Yeah, they actually know the kind of traffic that's moving around.
Exactly. It's like learning another language.
Sure.
And so I'm just teaching that other language to people, and that's it. And it still really is fun.
Yeah, and my instinct is this is all about security, but I love that whole thinking about how is your network being used for stuff like file transfers. I've got a friend who runs IT for a company that mostly runs AutoCAD. So, you know, every file is massive.
Oh, yeah.
And the stress on the network is really interesting. The idea that they could optimize their network to move big files, because that's what they do all day.
Oh, yeah. I'd love to see a trace of just their TCP handshakes.
Yeah.
Just send me a trace with the SYN bit on. Any packet with a SYN bit on. That's what I would look at there and see how are they setting up those TCP connections, or are they doing file transfer over UDP and doing some sort of error detection at an application layer versus leaving it to something like TCP.
Right.
I mean, they could stream UDP up there and throw the error detection at the app layer for better performance.
Yeah, but CRC it at the end, right? Like,
yes,
rather than shaking every packet.
I'm getting all excited. I gotta go take some trace files here. I have a whole list of things people have sent me asking me, hey, how does this work? How does this work? How does this work? And of course, it's like, I don't know. I'm going to go take a trace file.
Yeah,
the other day I was teaching a class online and we were sneaking around North Korean websites, and it was just fascinating to see that, they don't use some of the same methods we use, for communications. Hmm. And their graphic file types are a little bit unusual, a little suspect. I'd be a little careful. I'm sure I'm on some list in North Korea somewhere from all the time I spend on their cruising around their sites.
Looking at what they've been doing.
Yeah.
Yep. It is interesting to think about. They may all be all connected by the internet, but there are different practices networking wise in different parts of the world.
Yeah. It is interesting. I remember there was a time where every time I went over to Germany and taught a class in Germany, the routing systems, the way they set up their routing and this idea of using proxy ARP, it was so common over there in Germany. And yet I would go to another country and I wouldn't see that proxy ARP was a big thing.
Hmm.
And it made me wonder what was going on here. And it turned out that there was a tech magazine, a very popular tech magazine, and they had done this whole series on routing on your network and adding onto your network and enhancing your network. And you don't need to go in and change your subnet masks and things like that. Just let proxy ARP do it. And sure enough.
Interesting.
It was everywhere. It was just all over the place.
It's an issue that comes down to just a few people educating heavily creates a cluster of a difference there.
Yeah, exactly. And you can see, you know, and it's kind of like I tell people, you can tell how well the IT department gets along mm-hmm. by looking at the traffic on the network.
Right.
You can see when you've got very splintered groups, you know, the server group doesn't talk to the client group and the client group doesn't talk to the infrastructure group. And then you've got the app group, and you can kind of see that when that's happening by looking at the way that the network traffic runs and the fact that.
So the network is literally a reflection of the organization.
It really is.
Wow.
And that has always been true. You mm-hmm. can really tell how coordinated the team is that's supporting the network based on how coordinated the communications are on that network. It's just really, it's fascinating. It's just really fascinating. And the nice thing is to kind of get a heads up on, what you're dealing with when you walk into a location. You know, I always say, let me just pick up the traffic right away. I know you want to draw the whole picture of the life of your network up on a whiteboard, but I really just want to pick up the traffic right away.
Right.
And once I pick up that traffic, okay, now I can look around the room at the people and say, okay, I know what we're up against here.
Yeah. But you've also got quite a bit of experience too, to be able to have a sense about those things.
I have been doing it for a long time, but luckily I came into this as an instructor from a teaching standpoint. And rather than walking into an organization and feeling like the IT team is on the opposite side of the table and that, you know, here I'm the outside consultant coming in and there's the butting of the heads.
Yeah.
Luckily coming into it and saying, you know what? I'm going to be opening up Wireshark. I'm going to show you everything I do. I'm going to show you exactly how we look for certain problems. And all of a sudden, we're on the same side of the table.
Yeah.
We are
the enemy's on the screen, right? It's not the people. There's no opinion from you. You're just looking at the data that's available.
That's right. And they're going to look at it with me. And having them sit next to me and look at the packets with me is so much more efficient than if I were to say, oh, it's all smoke and mirrors, go in the other room and I'll just hide away and keep my secrets to myself of what I'm doing. No. If they're sitting next to me, they're going to be able to look at that traffic and say, oh, I know that one. That's that Active Directory server that we were talking about last week. That's the one I see. They know the IP addressing system. They know mm-hmm. their network. They're going to be able to spot things that to share with me to make my job easier. And I'm going to share everything I am doing with them to make their jobs easier. And we really become a team, and it makes a huge difference. It's very, it's really more enjoyable, than just saying, I'm going to come in there and take the traffic and tell you the solution.
Sure.
Yeah. That's no fun.
But I also think this is when you find out someone, you know, stood up a BitTorrent server uh-huh. some time ago and forgot about it.
Exactly. That's when you find all these things behind the scenes. And it's fun to watch people when you show them, this is my analysis of your network. This is what we're capturing right now. Mm-hmm. And you watch their eyes sort of open up when they didn't realize, you know, that one device was still active on the network.
Oh, yeah.
Or they didn't realize this old protocol. It still cracks me up when people have a printer somewhere on a network and it's got little old IPX, SPX on it. SAP. It's like, oh.
And it's still pinging out in the world like, please talk to me. Please.
Exactly. And it's like, oh, did you guys put that on there just because I used to work at Novell? Was that just a little gift? Yeah. That is so sweet. Thank you so much. but it is fun. You know, I really have been very fortunate over the years to have met some incredible, professionals in the IT industry, that just have put in grueling hours and are so dedicated to supporting these networks.
Yeah.
I can't say enough. And of course, what they're going through now, supporting all the remote users, I take my hat off to them. They're very challenging time.
A lot of them are crazy busy, you know, where mm-hmm. lots of other folks aren't. And in some ways, I think we're super fortunate that, you know, our industry still functions so well and we're helping.
Exactly.
Yeah, help a lot of folks.
Exactly. And I was on, I was playing around on Twitter last night and, you know, here's a guy in the IT industry that wrote a course for Udemy and he put it up online. He said, you know what? For the next 48 hours, my class is going to be free. But all I ask is for you to pay it forward. I want you to donate to a food bank.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, that kind of thing, seeing the ability of people to look beyond just their small world of my world is falling apart, collapsing. My world is really difficult. No. Somebody's got it tougher.
Yeah, there's always somebody.
You know, it's our job to sort of take care of other people besides ourselves.
Yeah, and make those small differences going forward. I am fascinated this idea that IT folks helping work from home, people that have unsophisticated networks. I talked to a fellow recently who was remotely admitting their wireless access points to turn on QoS, to deprioritize Netflix traffic and things like that, just to give them a little shape.
Mm-hmm.
But it is interesting to think in terms of, could you poke in, use some Wireshark, understand the traffic and do some optimizations that way?
Oh, yeah. And I bet the things you would see would just surprise you, the types of traffic that's running in the background. There are a lot of background processes people have running on their systems at their homes.
Mm-hmm.
I know from a lot of the games out there, some of the update processes are really heavy, heavy users of network traffic.
Oh, yeah.
And they don't need to be at the time you're not running that game. You could disable that update process in the background for that time when you are on a Skype call, you know, and you don't want that kicking off in the background because suddenly you are going to be, you know, your face is going to show up only half of it to everybody else.
Sure. Well, Windows itself, you know, if Windows has decided it needs an update on something, what you want to do is just not that important.
Exactly. And that's been fascinating, I think, is to look at what's on the home networks here. What have we got on these different laptops? You know, I go and I sit in my living room and I'll be sitting there playing around on my laptop while I've got some movie on or something like that. And it's like, oh, now I better pay attention because I've only got so much bandwidth.
Yeah.
And I really don't, I've got to prioritize some things now. So I do, you know, I think about it before I run Angry Birds. You know, four versions of Angry Birds simultaneously. So it's a different world.
Yeah. Well, it does speak to a different set of optimizations that are going to be needed because we have all these little remote networks that are now affecting our businesses.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And of course, security is huge.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about all the malware you pick up. It's like, how many zombie pings are going on right now? How many?
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
You don't have to find the software. You can see the evidence that matters. It's clearly active. It sent packets.
Oh, yeah. And one of the huge things right now is that everyone is in this news grab stage. So,
right.
You know, every day there's new information coming out and it's affecting all of our lives. So what I'm seeing from chatting to folks is that a lot of folks are like opening up every news link that says something positive.
Right.
If it's, you know, oh, we think we have found the, you know, the vaccine. Suddenly people are hitting on any news link and they're not making great decisions of where is that news link going?
Where did that come from?
You know, yeah. Well, when you're hitting a site that says www.imgonnakillyournetwork.com,
yeah.
That's not the news link you want to click on. And so, you know, talking with some of my neighbors and finding out that their systems are getting infected with malware at a rate that they've never been infected with malware because they are clicking wildly,
right,
all over the place for any sort of good news. And a lot of that is coming from inside of, you know, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Nextdoor. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. The bad actors are still acting.
Oh, Nextdoor is a perfect platform for just nailing your neighborhood because you have a lot of inexperienced folks on there. You know, people always talk about, you know, that Nextdoor app is, you know, Twitter for old folks and stuff.
Nice.
And it's true because you get a lot of people on there that don't understand technology at all. And their neighbor gave them a link for this great information. So of course they're going to click on that link. Oh, no. Don't trust your neighbors.
Well, because neighbors make mistakes too, right?
That's right.
And it's very interesting. These apps get exploited and people being pulled down along with them.
Yep.
Well, yep. Laura, super fun to catch up with you. I think we shouldn't wait 10 years though. That's a bit too long.
Well, I will be here. You know where I am.
Yeah,
and whenever you want to talk, just show.
Yeah, we dig in again, and I appreciate the links to all the cool stuff you guys are working on. Folks can learn more, and it sounds like if you don't have a Wireshark in your belt pocket right now, you need it.
Yeah, now especially is a good time just to take a moment, get a feel for your traffic, you know, see what you can pare down as far as updates in the background, try to conserve that bandwidth.
Yeah. And perhaps start working through each of those stay at homers and help their networks too, because they all affect our ability to be productive.
That's correct.
Yeah. Really interesting times. Laura Chappell, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Richard. It's so good talking with you.
Great to talk to you too. And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.